from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum this morning, Oakland Police Chief Howard Jordan unexpectedly resigned last week, citing medical reasons. His replacement as interim chief stepped down 2 days later. The turmoil in the department comes in the midst of two reports critical of Oakland Police. A report from a court-ordered overseer finds OPD out of compliance with federally mandated reforms from a decade-old police brutality case. Another report by law enforcement consultant William Bratton is critical of the department's ability to reduce crime. Forum takes up these issues. We'll talk with the newly appointed interim police chief, Sean Wendt, and others next after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. Oakland has been branded the robbery capital of the United States with one of the nation's worst crime-solving records, while its police department has been called one of the nation's worst. It has also had three police chiefs in 3 days and two recently released reports critical of its performance, one dealing with the Ryder's police misconduct case compliance going back to 2003, and the other a report critical of the department's lack of reduction of crime. In this morning's opening forum hour, we want to focus on the beleaguered and understaffed Oakland Police Department. And joining us in studio is Mathai Kuruvilla, Oakland City Hall reporter with the San Francisco Chronicle. Good morning.
Thanks for having me.
Glad to have you. We also have online with us Deputy Chief Sean Wendt, who is interim police chief for the Oakland Police Department. Chief Wendt, good to have you.
Good morning. How are you?
Good morning to you, sir. We also say good morning to Lindy Schaff, who is Oakland Council member, Libby Schaff, with District 4. She also sits on the Public Safety Committee. And welcome, Councilwoman Schaff. Good to have you.
Thank you, Michael.
So thank you all for being here. And I thought, as is customary, begin with the journalist, Mathai Kuruvilla, who's here with us in studio. First of all, let's just get the picture of these two reports. Can you give us a quick rundown? And are they in sync with each other? Can they be in sync with each other? People think they're kind of at loggerheads.
Well, the two reports are important because they really highlight the two different tensions that are really shaping the Oakland Police Department right now. One was a report by Thomas Frazier. He's the compliance director for the Oakland Police Department.
Former Baltimore police chief.
Former Baltimore police chief. He has a very unusual role that was created by a federal court called a compliance director, and he has the power to fire the chief, demote deputy chiefs. He has the power to spend up to $250,000 per contract unilaterally. He has power to direct the city administrator. And he issued a report 2 weeks ago now in which he was very critical of the department's leadership and their ability to hold subordinates accountable.
So let me stop you there for a minute.
Sure.
Is he the reason that Chief Jordan resigned, do you think? Or was he pushed or did he resign really, as he said, because of medical difficulties? Do we know?
Well, Chief Jordan has said that he resigned because of medical difficulties. At the same time, the Frazier report, this man who has the power to fire Jordan, issued a report that was extremely critical of the entire command staff. Frazier had the power to fire the chief and demote the deputy chiefs, and a week later, almost that exact same thing happens. So it's a bit of speculation, but it sure looks like it. Frazier had a heavy hand in there, and we know that Mayor Kwan went to Frazier with the selection of Chief Wendt to make sure that it was okay with him.
We had three chiefs within a week, and now there's a national search going on, and we'll talk with the present police chief. In fact, because we're going to talk with the newly named acting police chief, you may indeed want to bring questions to him. And let me give out the number now. In fact, if you'd like to join us, you can do so at our toll-free number, 866-733-6786. I want to give that number out now because I know there are many of you who may have questions for Chief Wendt. Before I get to Chief Wendt, though, let me continue, if I may, with the guest here in studio again, it's Mathai Kuruvilla, who writes, follows Oakland for the San Francisco Chronicle. Let's talk about the Bratton Report, because we've got a whole new set of recommendations there. And how are they different than recommendations that came 6 years ago, or are they that different?
Well, the main difference here is that the city has got a highest violent crime rate in the state. It's under extreme pressure to change. It's got this you've got a mayor who's up for re-election next year. You've got a lot of pressures to turn things around. And So that's a big part of what's different right now. But at the same time, Bratton, unlike Fraser has had the power to direct spending. Bratton is just making suggestions.
So let's talk to Deputy Chief Sean Wendt, who again is interim police chief with the Oakland Police Department. And Chief, you may have seen this in the Oakland Tribune. Tamerlane Drummond decided to give a job description for the job you've just taken on that would go out. And it says, Chief of Police wanted to head demoralized, critically short-staffed department in one of the most violent cities in the United States. Must answer to mayor, a bevy of police consultants, a compliance director, and a federal judge. The compliance director can overturn any decision you make and recommend that you be fired. That kind of says it, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it certainly will be a challenge, but you know, I think that any worthwhile thing to do is, so I'm up for the challenge.
And you've said even publicly, not only are you up for the challenge, but you feel you have a roadmap. What can you tell us about that roadmap?
I'm sorry, can you repeat the question?
You have said publicly that you have a roadmap to really bring things to a better conclusion here in terms of reducing robberies and burglaries and also making sure that there's compliance. And can you tell us what this roadmap entails or what you've envisioned of it?
Well, it really is largely the stuff from the report that we our experts that we hired. So we're going to roll out the neighborhood district plan with the captains in charge of the geographic areas. And then that is going to be key in reducing robberies, especially as we begin to add the district-based investigation units.
There's been some concern about your lack of experience. I know you're a 17-year veteran with the police force, but can you address the concern that has been expressed by others and put them more at ease about your experiences?
Yeah, well, I mean, I have experience all over the police department in operations jobs and in administrative jobs. And I think I've done well in each of them. But it's not just me that's here. I mean, I've assembled a team that also has experience in assignments all over the police department. And so I think that the team we've put together is well qualified to implement this plan, reduce crime, and get us in compliance.
You feel pretty confident about reducing crime, and it's certainly good to hear that kind of confidence from you because Oakland has had such serious problems. I'm just wondering, though, I know you've had some help from the CHP and you've had more civilian employees to take reports and actually are funding police academies now to produce more officers, but the fact is you're terribly understaffed.
Yeah, no, we are terribly understaffed, but, I mean, there is hope on the horizon. We've got people in field training now that'll get cut loose in July. That'll be 30 cops that we can assign. That's good. We've got police academies, one in session now, one starting in September, one starting in December. The mayor has committed in her budget to have two academies a year over the next few years, so that will help on the sworn staffing side. We're adding more police service technicians and more lab technicians, and all of those things are to contribute to being able to reduce crime here.
And what about reducing police misconduct? I mean, you've had a lot of experience in internal affairs. Some see that as a bright light. Others are concerned about it. Can you sort of give us your version of how that helps or perhaps present some kind of obstacle for you?
Well, I mean, ultimately, yeah, I have had experience in internal affairs. But, I mean, what I've learned there is by and large, our officers are doing the right thing on a daily basis. And, you know, sometimes they make mistakes and sometimes there's misconduct. And when those things happen, we will address it. But, you know, I think what gets lost in there is, by and large, our guys are doing the right thing on a daily basis.
And can we bring these two reports into harmony with one another, or are they to some extent at cross purposes in terms of following through on them?
I don't think they're at cross purposes. I mean, everybody I've talked to, from the mayor, the city administrator, to Wasserman and Bill Bratton and the compliance director and the monitor, everybody wants the same thing. They want to reduce crime, and they want to get us in compliance, and you know, they want to have constitutional policing in the city of Oakland. I don't think that's too much to ask.
Well, I'm sure many have read Bratton's report, Bill Bratton, former L.A. police chief. He said there just has not been enough done to handle burglaries. You got one part-time investigator in charge of handling 10,000 reported burglaries back in 2012. I mean, you've seen the statistics, Chief. You know how bad it is.
Right, yeah. So beefing up investigative resources is going to be one of our priorities here. Like I said, we got people about to get cut loose from the field training program. I think we can add staff to investigations at that time. And also, you know, we're hiring another fingerprint technician. So those kind of things also help with burglaries.
And the Bratton Report also is recommending that there should be more police accountability. And actually, five districts, patrol districts, led each by a captain singly.
Right. And that we think we can get out in the very short run. We can get that running next month.
And you're predicting crime reduction then? We can have you on record on that?
You can have me on record. We are predicting that crime will continue to go down. I mean, homicides are down this year. Shootings are down. That's progress already. I mean, part of that is our efforts with Operation Ceasefire, and we're going to continue doing that as well. So if we can turn our attention to some robberies as well, then we really could look for some good things to happen.
I believe you've said to the citizens of Oakland that you can reduce robberies within 6 months. Can you make any, I suppose this is in part a kind of fatuous question, but any prediction about what kind of reduction you hope to see at least?
Well, I would hope to see 100% reduction, but I'll shoot for the best we possibly can.
Okay, good luck to you. I mean, at this point, robberies have increased just last year in Oakland 20% as compared to 16% in San Jose and 13% in San Francisco, just for the record. Since we have you here, Chief, let me bring some callers on, and let's go first to Oakland. Lulu, good morning.
Good morning. I'm a resident of Oakland and excited about the possibilities that this transition might offer for turning things around in our fair city. It's also a really scary time for residents such as myself. It feels like the police department's in a little bit of free fall along with that transition, really powerless feeling. So I'm wondering what the guidance to individual citizens is about what we should be doing and how we can mitigate any of the uncertainty around this time of transition. And then I want to finish with a huge thank you to the entire force for their ongoing service. I think it must be tough to be a cop in Oakland, and we really appreciate your service. And I'll take it off the air.
Thanks. All right. Thank you for the call. Chief Wendt, what are you telling citizens in terms of enlisting their help?
Well, a couple of things. First of all, the police department is not in turmoil. We had a change of command last week, but our mission continues. And so they can rest assured that we are absolutely dedicated to reducing crime here. And then as far as what they can do, they can get involved. We have neighborhood crime prevention councils. There's lots of ways for the community to get involved in helping the police reduce crime here.
Let me thank the caller and go to some of
Michael, can I add something?
Oh, please.
An important thing is the city council now is considering passage of Oakland's budget.
Councilwoman, I just want to identify you. This is Libby Schaff, who's an Oakland council member. Please go ahead.
So another important thing citizens can do is be sure to have their priorities heard in the budget process. It's true that the proposed budget increases the police force to 700 officers within 2 years, but not everybody is supporting that proposal. So if citizens believe we need to rebuild the police department, they need to make sure their voices are heard. Also, the proposed budget increases the sworn officers, but does not increase any of the civilian positions, the evidence technicians, the crime lab specialists. Those are also very important, and those are things that were highlighted by the Bratton Report. So please be heard during the budget process.
And you are a pretty strong supporter of the Bratton Report. I want you on record on that, yes?
Absolutely.
Because?
Because it shows how we can strengthen, I think the two reports are very consistent. They both talk to strengthening relationships with the community. They both talk about strengthening accountability, supervision, and leadership within the department. And they also put a lot more attention on investigations so we can actually deploy our officers in ways that will keep crime from happening in the first place. That's something we all want.
There were, however, some complaints from city council members that they were out of the loop in all of this. The decisions made, three police chiefs within a week, and that a number of changes, and particularly dramatic changes, were made without the city council being involved.
Well, that is probably true, but our job is to actually support good direction. I think we have good direction. We have a great leadership team in place. And one of the problems in the past as far as keeping good leadership in Oakland has been micromanaging by too many bodies. And so I think my job as a council member is to focus on the budget, focus on policy, and support my police chief.
Well, let me go back to Interim Police Chief Sean Wendt for a moment and just, Chief, is it going to be, let me go to a Facebook comment here and get your response to it. Oscar writes, How do you plan to reduce the crime rate in Oakland, especially when it comes to both robberies and graffiti? And do you plan on offering police officers incentives to live in Oakland, because we have more than half of the officers living, paying taxes, and spending their money in cities outside of Oakland?
Right. Well, okay. So our focus is primarily on crimes against people. So we're like robberies. And we're going to do that. One of the ways is with the neighborhood plan. So by giving a captain a smaller span of control and investigative resources and enforcement resources, they can more narrowly tailor enforcement efforts at combating those types of crimes. So when we did it in the past, we've given them too large a span of control and it wasn't manageable. And that's kind of why it's failed for us in the past. That is corrected under the new plan. And I think that's why you'll see progress on robberies.
So public safety is the primary goal under the new plan, but you've got 51 reforms that must be complied with in the settlement case.
Sure, but I don't think they're at cross purposes. I mean, the reforms say that you have to do things in a constitutional manner. I think we can all support that, but that should not be an impediment to reducing crime.
Another listener writes, I've lived in San Francisco's Mission District for 6+ years, almost never heard gunshots. I lived in Oakland's Laurel District for 3 and have heard more gunshots than I've heard in my entire life, possibly including all the Rambo movies. Why can't Oakland get more guns and hoods off the street? I'd be ready to see the National Guard walking beats in my neighborhood. I'm not joking.
Yeah, no, I mean, obviously it is a problem for us. One of the things, you know, we have the ShotSpotter system, which is going to help in that regard, in that what we find when we look at ShotSpotter maps versus calls for service about gunshots, there's a wide disparity, and it's because a lot of people aren't even calling when they hear the gunshots. So by having ShotSpotter, we can more quickly get officers to the scene of where shootings are occurring or where people are firing guns, and then ideally arrest more people for them.
Let me bring another caller in here, and that's you, Nick. You're on.
Hi. I really love your show, by the way. About 4 months back, I was jumped by 5 people near 98th and MacArthur. And Chief, you probably know 98th and MacArthur, not the nicest place to be. Luckily, I was able to defend myself, and I was perfectly fine. And I actually ended up hurting the perpetrators who attacked me. And it turns out that when the police officers came, there was about 6 police cars that came to the scene, and I felt that it was a kind of a waste that maybe 2 needed to have been there, but not all 6 of them. And I wanted to ask, one, what are you going to do about the wastefulness of that type of thing? And the assailants turned out to be much younger than me. They turned out to be 16, 17, and 18. And do you have any plans to help educate the youth of Oakland to try and keep them out of gangs?
Okay, well, so we rely upon our patrol sergeants to manage the resources responding to crimes in progress like that. So, I mean, you shouldn't have 6 go to a scene. You should have them spread out and look, check the area. But the fact that there's multiple suspects, that would result in sending more police officers to that. And as far as the youth go, well, we are absolutely want to engage the youth in Oakland. I mean, that's the future. So if we can prevent youth from getting into a life of crime, that's a big win for us. Ultimately, yeah, that has to be our focus. So we have officers assigned to the schools, even at the junior high level now, hoping to catch some of these kids before they get involved in in gang activity.
Let me go back to Mathai Kuravilla, who again is Oakland City Hall reporter with the San Francisco Chronicle. I'm getting a lot of reassurance about these 2 reports and how they're not at cross purposes, but there are some who are saying, and we may hear from them in the course of this hour, I believe we will, that compliance by Thomas Frazier's standards does not necessarily contribute to, say, the priority of public safety.
I mean, absolutely. You'll hear from Chief Wendt. You'll hear from the plaintiff's attorneys. You'll hear from many people that these are not at cross purposes. At the same time, there's a perception problem. You have a compliance director who can authorize spending for compliance, but we still have a police department that doesn't have enough officers. We still have a police department that doesn't have enough proper equipment and radios. And what we've seen in the last few years is a dramatic drop in the number of arrests and stops by Oakland police. Now, if you talk to Oakland police officers, a number of them will say they're afraid to do some of these very basic elements of policing because they're afraid to get into the crosshairs of the compliance director. So the perception among officers is certainly that. And then at the same time, you now have a police chief, Chief Wendt, who is very involved in internal affairs and cracking down on officer misconduct. There's also concern among officers that this only heightens that concern of getting into the crosshair, so to speak, of the reform effort.
Councilwoman Schaaf, can I get you to weigh in here?
Sure. It is certainly something that we hear, that officer morale is low, but I think that the just thinness of the troops is causing much more of a strain on our officers than the threat of the compliance officer. I think the best thing we can do is rebuild our police department. They've been at an all-time low of 611 officers just a month ago, and that's where our focus needs to be.
Let me bring another caller in. Timothy joining us. Good morning, Timothy.
Yes, a question for all, especially the Chronicle reporter on the problem of the low level of police force in Oakland and how this might have actually been caused, these hundreds of peace officers terminated because of the policy of the city of Oakland of providing Chinese language and Spanish language interpretation and translation services for every public act in the city of Oakland. This is a huge budgetary expense. This has probably displaced those several hundred officers. And would your guest please comment on this displacement of these translation interpretation language services for the officers that were fired?
Can we go to you on this, Mathai?
Sure. I think that's not the quite right analysis. There were 80 officers laid off in 2010, and that was over a battle over how much officers would contribute to their pensions and the job security they would get in return. So that was 80 officers. Since then, you've had another 80 officers who left and were not replaced. So budget issues have heavily driven the reduction in officers. And right now, the budget is changing and is improving. And that's part of why Mayor Kwan and her administration want to increase the number of officers to 700 over 2 years.
But the revenue was hit very hard by the cost of Occupy Oakland. I mean, that goes without saying here.
Occupy was came after that. And you know, the city has said that they were able to cover it through other sources. But yes, they did not increase the number of officers during that Occupy period, and that could have been an opportunity.
Let me bring another Oakland caller on here. Joe, join us, please. You're on.
Hi, Michael. This is actually Joe Tooman calling. And I wanted to sort of ask a question of the new chief about his claim that you're ramping up. The academies that you mentioned this year in 2013 will only graduate about, by my count, 78 officers. The new academy class in September will graduate in 2014. So we're averaging between 70 and 80 officers or cadets a year with two academies. If we're losing an average of 4.5 to 5 officers a month to attrition, so between 54 and 60 officers a year to attrition, then the difference between 78 and 54 is about 24 officers a year that we're adding.
Joe, forgive me. Let me jump in here because we're coming close to the clock here, and the chief is with us right to the half hour. Chief, could you respond?
Yeah, well, one of the things, you're right, the attrition does slow down the progress we make in adding people. But one of the things I did, so the December Academy was originally planned to be a March Academy, so March of next year. So by moving it up 3 months, we help, you know, get a few bodies out there quicker. There's also things we're doing in the Academy to help lower the the failure rate of the police academy so that we actually graduate more people in each one. So you're right, it does slow down the effectiveness a bit, but I think we're taking some steps to get a little bit ahead of that.
Let me extend my thanks to you, Interim Police Chief Sean Wen, and best of luck to you. Certainly formidable obstacles up ahead. I wish you good luck.
Thank you, sir.
And thank you, Libby Schaaf, Oakland Council Member, District 4, who sits on the Public Safety Committee. Again, good luck to you and the City of Oakland. Thank you for joining us. We're going to be joined by some others. As well as you, you can join us toll-free at 866-733-6786. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. Oakland Police Chief Howard Jordan unexpectedly resigned just last week, citing medical reasons. His replacement as interim chief stepped down 2 days later. The turmoil in the Oakland Police Department comes in the midst of two reports critical of the Oakland Police. A report from a court-ordered overseer finds OPD out of compliance with federally mandated reforms from a decade-old police brutality case. And another report by law enforcement consultant William Bratton is critical of the department's ability to reduce crime. We're taking up these issues We talked with the newly appointed interim police chief, Deputy Chief Sean Wendt, who is now interim police chief of the Oakland Police Department. We also spoke with Lillaby Schaff, who is an Oakland City Council member. And Mathai Kuravilla is with us, Oakland City Hall reporter for the San Francisco Chronicle. And I want to welcome John Burris, civil rights attorney who represents the family of Oscar Grant, killed by a BART policeman, and has been certainly involved representing many cases through the years, veteran attorney. John Burris, good to have you with us.
Yeah, good to be with you. It's always good.
And Geoff Collins is also with us, former member of the Oakland Community Policing Advisory Board. He's here in studio. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Michael.
Glad to have you both. And John Burris, if I may, let me just get some response from you. You've been listening, and I know you have a good deal of faith in Chief Sean Wendt. You're on record as saying that you do. Maybe hear about your concern, so where he's or where the police department itself is concerned. But what I really need to ask you is, since you have faith in the integrity of the police, the acting police chief, are we kind of at this, I keep calling it cross purposes here with these two reports? I mean, do they really jibe with each other?
Well, I think that they jibe with each other, use your term, to the extent that we're taking a forward approach here. We have the issues have been defined. We have new people in positions to enact the programs. We have a compliance director who is on board with the programs, and we have the monitors, and, of course, the plaintiff counsel like myself are on board. So notwithstanding what the past has been, I think that everyone can see that this is an opportunity to go forward, take a fresh look at this, fresh approach. And so from my point of view, it's a new beginning, and so I'm optimistic that all these particular competing interests can work at the same time and work in harmony with each other.
Agree, Geoff Collins?
Well, I do agree, but here's the real problem. If there was any doubt in anybody's mind last week, the week of the three chiefs should have ended it, that Tom Frazier and Bob Washaw, the monitor, are in complete control of this department, and that's fine. And indeed, Commissioner Frazier's powers have been extended beyond the NSA by the judge, and that's fine. But is Tom Frazier accountable to the citizens of Oakland for public safety? We know he's accountable to the judge for compliance. And I believe the concern in the community right now is when you have this rampant crime, you have this good plan put forward by Bratton and Wasserman, where will Commissioner Frazier's emphasis be? Will it be on the compliance issues? Will it be on supporting the Bratton plan? I hope it's both, but that is a question, and I think it's one that we need to look at.
So your concern is, excuse me, John Bruce, I just want to clarify this, with respect to compliance, according to Frazier, or what he's demanding and insisting ought to be compliance, that's going to possibly trump public safety.
It shouldn't, because as John will tell you, and I agree with him, constitutional policing is good public safety policy. But public safety has to have a program and a operative way of going forward as well. So you have one man, Tom Frazier, who is in charge of this police department. Make no mistake about it. And while his staff is excellent, is the emphasis going to be solely on the compliance or partially on the public safety aspect of the Bratton plan? I mean, that to us is a concern in the community. I have great faith, by the way, in Frazier that he can do both.
And John Burris.
Yeah, I don't think that they're incompatible at all. I've talked to Mr. Frazier a lot, and I know that he is interested in public safety. I mean, he's a police chief, and that has been his emphasis. The compliance director's role, though, and in terms of enforcing the NSA and making the department at a high standard, is not inconsistent at all with this plan, because at the end of the day, the police chief and his team has the responsibility, clear responsibility, of dealing with law enforcement issues. There's nothing about the NSA and nothing about with the compliance report that interferes with that. It only goes to the issue of monitoring, supervising, and holding officers and the command staff accountable for what is being done. But that accountability does not in any way undermine quality policing, a program. I don't think that Mr. Frazier at all has put forth any kind of ideas that undermines what Mr. Bratton and his plan sought to do. I'm for that. I mean, the question makes sense to me is how do we get good quality policing. I, for one, live in Oakland. Jim Channon lives in Oakland. Many other people don't, so we have as much concern about safety as anyone else. I don't see it as incompatible. I don't think Mr. Frazier is running the department. I think John Wendt will be given every opportunity to run this department, run it in ways that he and his command staff sees fit. Of course, Mr. Frazier will hold him accountable for enforcing not only that agreement, but as well as the NSA, and that's how it should be.
Well, listeners, we'd like to hear from you. You can call us now at 866-733-6786. Again, that's toll-free, 866-733-6786. And you can also join the conversation on our website and Facebook page or email us at forum@kqed.org. There's a tweet from a listener. I'd like to go to you on this, if I may, Matthew, Mathai Kuravilla. Carl tweets, where is the mayor's concept of community policing?
Well, let me answer in a different way. With these five new patrol districts that you'll have much more of an emphasis on community policing. They're designed for officers and investigators to be much more involved with their local neighborhoods. So I think this plan that Bratton has put forth is part of the mayor's vision.
Are the number of police out on the street affected by compliance with the suit?
It's not that so much that the number of officers are out on the street are affected by compliance, but there's a perception problem, again, that's part of what the police department will have to wrestle with, that there's a perception among officers on the street about what they can and can't do, and there's clearly a lack of training and development of these officers. Bratton has identified it, Frazier has identified it, about how to do policing properly and not get in the crosshairs. What you've seen instead is arrests and stops going down.
Having been involved in addressing and writing the NSA, and it's relating to police officers, was based upon the best practices of policing. OPD command staff were part of that process in putting it together. I've never understood why police officers have found it so difficult to be in compliance with the terms of the NSA and the best practices. I don't know what that complaint is all about, because it has nothing to do with preventing them from doing their job. It is true they're being looked at, they're being held accountable, but in terms of how to be a good police officer, there's nothing in the NSA that prevents them from doing it. I'll tell you, the major problem that they have here in the community policing is how they treat the people in the community. It's called basic respect, and as long as you engage in activity that is not respectful, that involves racial profiling with various communities, you will always have problems, and none of this will work. I'll tell you that now. If the police officers aren't trained to talk to people and treat them with respect, there's no plan that will work. But there's nothing about the NSA that inhibits them from being good police officers.
Do you want to say something here, Jeff Collins?
Well, yeah. I mean, John is right. I disagree with him in one area, but where he's right is, yes, the NSA will make and does make best practices policy, and it certainly would enhance police officers. But the problem is we've been at this for 10 years. We've been at this through a succession of police chiefs and city administrators and council members who, and I think, John, you'll agree with me, who have been responsible for not following through with this. This is not just about the officers. This, in many ways, they become the victims of a functional breakdown at the government level for the past 10 years. And as to the officers and their treatment of the citizens, sure, we want them to be respectful. But as Tom Frazier says in his compliance report introduction, the vast majority of these officers are hardworking, dedicated men and women who are working under extraordinary circumstances. There are a few that need to be disciplined. I think that says it all.
Let me bring a caller in here. I'm sorry, Mathai.
I think what Mr. Burris is bringing up is a very important point, because you saw when Bratton was considered to be hired by the city council in January to develop this short-term plan, what you had was a massive protest at City Hall. And I think it underscored just a much deeper distrust of the police department. You also had a tremendous turnout by people who wanted Bratton and increased policing. But what it showed is just this incredible tension right now within Oakland about people who both want or are clamoring for more police, and people who are worried about how they'll be treated by them.
We also have listeners like Dan saying, how about adding more security cameras? I mean, lots of ideas coming in here. I want to get to a caller, though. Erica, join us. Hi.
Hi. Thank you very much for taking my call. This is a very timely issue that you're dealing with. I had a question specifically for John Burris. I just was interested in his perspective about, I live in Oakmore, where the mayor lives, and we have a rampant and horrifying crime problem. Mm-hmm. And so we are in the process. One neighborhood contingent to ours is already organized private security, which we're all as homeowners paying for. My street is also organizing this. We're going to put it into play in June. And part of it is because when we call the police, they just refuse to come. And I know this firsthand because I called them. There was some illegal activity going on over the weekend. I called and asked them to respond. And they told me, I think the morale is really bad, but they said, like, we're too busy. We're not coming over there.
Well,
so
I'm
just curious about what, you know, our tax dollars, do they buy us any police response in our neighborhood? And if not, like, is the city putting themselves in a bad situation where we're having to pay for private security?
Well, I'll tell you, I live in Oakland, and I have a neighborhood that's likewise very concerned about break-ins and stuff. And so we have meetings, and we've, you know, we've got video cameras being put up. There's private security being organized in the area. And so, yeah, we have the similar kind of problems. Now, in terms of how the money is being spent, you know, we have the same problem of lack of calls, failure to respond to calls. I'm hopeful that this new approach where you have divided the city up in ways that we will get better responses in the communities, because we know that the gangsters or the crooks or the robbers, they're aware of this lack of response, and so we don't get the kind of responses. But, you know, as a private citizen, I'm clearly for that. And but also, I have my own sense of constitutional policing and what that also means, but I don't think there's nothing about the NSA or the constitutional police and how the money is being spent that prevents officers from, in fact, responding to calls. Now, that may very well be a question of deployment. Deployment is a question that the police chief has to address themselves to. A lot of what this new approach is identifying what the hot spots are and holding the responding officers or captains responsible for those areas. So I am hopeful that this new approach will, in fact, ensure that we'll get better responses and the officers will be more inclined to respond. I do think you got to deal with this morale problem and suggest that Fraser's not the problem. The NSA is not the problem. It's really a question of officers understanding that no one is out to get them, that they have to, in fact, do what they're trained to do. Many officers, I mean, I talk to these officers as well. There's a lot of wonderful people on the police department who want to do good work and who are trying to do good work. But on the other hand, they are limited, and you get poisoned. You get poisoned by the bad apples who talk down to everything. And it's also true that for the first 2 to 3 years, maybe five, that there was no effort made to get the officers to buy into the NSA, to let them understand that it was a really good thing to do. And as a consequence, the negativism developed around it, and us became the problem as opposed to looking at why it, in fact, took place. We've had many cases since then that clearly indicate that many officers were out of control. I don't believe it's just a few, but there are many who try to do good work, but there are officers who do not do good work. And those are the ones we always are trying to weed out. But in answer to the question, it's a question of deployment. I think this new approach will be helpful, because I agree we ought not have to spend money to have private security or have video cameras at the front and ending of any entrance to our neighborhood.
John, do you think that with this new administration, you're finally going to have an apology tendered for the Cheo Van case?
Well, I hope so, but I don't really know. You know, I'm not really actively involved in the real policing aspect of it. I'm really more of a monitor, if you will. But in terms of the deployment, I support the chief and his efforts to bring the department into compliance and to do good policing. He seems to be a man that I've known, worked with over the last 5 or 6 years, who is, as I say, a straight shooter and does what he says he's going to do. Whether he can meet all of these challenges, and certainly with the community or not, is another matter, but time will tell.
Mathai Kuravilla, have a listener who writes on the website, why has no one mentioned OPD's massive salary package that prevents the department from actually staffing up to reasonable levels? The city spends over 40% on policing to the expense of other city services. OPD is the only police department in the country to have federal reforms drag on this long, and why is that? I mean, these are questions that, of course, keep coming up over and over again.
Well, I have to tell you, I don't understand why it has taken 10 years to get this done. We agreed it was for 5 years with an option for two. Every other department in this country has, for the most part, been able to get the reforms done in 5 years, if not 5, 7 years. It seems to me, and I think Jeff is right in one sense, there was not a commitment on the citywide level to do this. Now, I will tell you, I think the mayor, who's been here more recently in the last 2 years, has had a commitment. I think she has done more so than any of the other mayors that we had who understood the complexity of the problem, who tried to resolve it. But it's a big problem. So I don't know why it's taken that. Now, one of the issues that you make reference to is a recurring problem around the country, and that is the police packages. The union, they're represented by very capable lawyers, and they act as a union. That union is for the individual members and not necessarily for anyone else or the impact that it has on other cities. When we had to deal with this last thing around the whole question of a receivership, we didn't address ourselves to police packages because our view was the individual officers really respond to their command, and it's up to the command people to put them into shape. But the city itself, in terms of its own way it manages its money, it has to deal with the police and the unions and how they bargain for their particular rights.
Yeah, I initially asked this question of Mathai because, I mean, you've been covering this as a reporter, and the fact is it's not sustainable. The pensions are not sustainable, and the police force is, from many people's perspective, paid quite handsomely as far as police officers are concerned.
Absolutely, and it's a huge concern among a lot of residents. At the same time, the Police Officers Association will tell you this is the city with the highest violent crime rate in the state. They're putting their lives out on the line. You have four officers killed in the line of duty as recently as 2010. And what does it take to attract people to want to work in the streets? I'm not the one to answer these questions. I'm just saying this tension always goes back and forth. Do you need more officers to make the city safe, and at what cost?
I'll read an email, a comment on our website. Oakland's troubled police department is a microcosm of the failures of the U.S. war on drugs that created gangs, cartels, and more crime than even the syphilis-ridden Al Capone could have imagined. The crappy CompStat-driven police departments of the 21st century destroy traditional police procedures and open the doors to every two-bit hack in the PD to play Harvey Keitel and the Bad Lieutenant. No sympathy here for California's grotesquely overpaid cops. Joff, you want to comment?
Yeah, well, let me just get in here a little bit. Look, we can go into a myriad of causes for problems with police departments. But by the way, they are police departments that are all over the country that are suffering from and afflicted by many of these problems. Some of it been self-inflicted, for sure. But a lot of it has been economics. It's been political leadership and so forth. But let me just say one thing to bring this kind of a little more focus. You know, one idea that's being tossed about by members of this community right now is asking Judge Henderson to appoint Frazier as the interim chief as well. Why? Well, number one, they're searching for a new chief at this point, spending money for it, and I assume interviewing for a new chief. Why would anybody, any police officer in their right mind, want to come in here now under these circumstances when he's got or she has to report to, I guess, the mayor, the city administrator, and Tom Frazier? I think, and I'm not being facetious in suggesting this, I know it probably won't go anywhere, but I think Tom Frazier can not only get us into compliance, I believe with his experience, he can also help rebuild this department. And John, I think you'll agree with me. If you look at Tom's budget that's in his compliance report, he is addressing the radio issue. He is requesting funds from the city council on equipment, on IT overhaul, and that will directly benefit both the public safety as well as these officers. So, as I say, maybe a little facetiously, let's just make him the interim chief as well. But in any event, the point is, I think he will be accountable to us for our public safety, and we get the best of both worlds as a result.
Good to hear this optimism, but I'm, of course, getting a lot of response from listeners who have been through some pretty serious kind of trials. Just to give you an example, here's Randolph, who writes, "Our car got stolen in front of our house a few weeks ago. We couldn't get a police officer to come out to the house and take a report. We talked to an officer who told us to go online to make a report, but there was nowhere online to do this. Then we were told to go down to the police station to file the report. They wouldn't take the report there either. On our fourth try, we were able to get an officer to come to the house, but we had to wait 4 hours. It seems to me the police force are underfunded, understaffed, disincentivized, and overpaid." And that's a pretty common type of complaint. Let me get another caller on here from Oakland. Pamela, good morning.
Good morning. I wanted to bring us back to community policing because I was on the very first community policing advisory task force back in the early 90s, right before we passed the ordinance that we would indeed have community policing in Oakland. We never got it, and we were told repeatedly by very There have been lots of chiefs, not just in the last few days, but over the last, you know, decade. And they told us you really have to wait for the culture of the force to change because a lot of them don't want to do it. Now, let me say that a lot of them do want to do it, but it wasn't really, you know, something that they were enabled to do, and because it's very preventive. So all the thing we're talking about constitutional policing versus public safety is nonsense, because we should be able to have both if we have a modern police force.
Let me weigh in on the community policing issue, because I wrote about this back in the late 90s, and I thought it would be a very a good way to interact with the community, and I found two things. One, that police officers at the time didn't want to go into community policing because they didn't think it was a stepping stone to promotion, so it was not viewed in a positive way, and that was sort of a nationwide view of things. And then secondly, that ultimately those who were directed toward community policing were really turned into drug enforcement officers. And so therefore, instead of community policing, they became task force type individuals, and that undermined their ability.
But
so,
excuse me, John, Pamela, aren't you saying that you think we're ready for community policing?
Yeah, I think actually the change first to geographic policing that happened under Jordan, and now having a person who understands, he's over training besides being over IA, I think this is a real possibility that we're going to now move forward into real community policing, and that we'll have a real change in the culture of the force, and that those officers who don't want to change will move on. We'll see that, you know, we're going to be modernizing. I also agree that getting the equipment is really necessary. I worked for a city councilman in the early 90s, and even then they had poor computer equipment. So I think we're modernizing and moving into community policing, and that will make us safer because that prevents crimes.
Pamela, let me thank you for your call. I want to just remind listeners, you're listening to Forum. We're talking now with John Burris and Jeff Collins, also Mathai Kuravilla with us, and this is a fundraising period for this radio station. For more information about how to support KQED, go to kqed.org. I'm Michael Krasny. And we'll go to another caller from Oakland. That's Aaron. Good morning.
Hi, how you doing? 14-year resident of Oakland, and it seems to me, just as Occupy Oakland put a financial strain on the city's budget, which hurt public safety, it also seems like there's a large number of frivolous lawsuits that are brought against the city by lawyers who are defending criminals, and it seems like the city's policy is to pretty much settle out of court more often than not. And it seems to me like if while some of the times, you know, these lawsuits are just, but often it just seems like the criminals just know they can just sue and make a lot of money. And it seems to me like if the city quit settling all these, like, lawsuits out of courts and actually took them to trial, while at first it might hurt the budget a little bit, it seems like down the road criminals would know they can't just see the city as a cash cow, and these, like, you know, leeching lawyers won't just make a huge profit off of the city. And that's pretty much my comment.
Let me get a response from Jeff Collins, who is laughing here.
Let me respond to that, because I'm the one that...
No, I knew I wouldn't get a word in now.
Well, he put his thumb up first here, John. If you'll just give him a word here, and then we'll go to you.
Well, John, I'm sure you have your view on this, but I think there's some validity to what the caller says. I believe that because the city is self-insured, I think it only goes up to $4 million. It might have an excess above that. And, of course, it has a lot of defense fees involved. And I don't think it has a strong bullpen of defense attorneys in-house. I think more of these cases should be tried. I've noticed that we just did get a verdict in one of these cases, these civil rights cases, just about 2 weeks ago. And we had excellent representation of the officers, as a matter of fact, that accompanied that and was responsible for it. So I agree. I think more of these cases do need to be tried. That doesn't mean that we'll win them, but I think they do need to be tried.
And John Burris.
I'm going to say that, you know, I hear this all the time, but that's just an apologetic thing for the police. Many of these police officers do much more worse things than actually come to lawsuits at all. Many of them can't come to be tried because they don't have witnesses to them. But you are closing your eyes to the fact that these officers do some very outrageous and vicious things to people in this community, and they're not frivolous lawsuits. They may not be able to get as much as they deserve. It's not criminals. The issue is, who are the criminals in this particular point? I hate to be philosophical about this, but I see these people come to my office every day who are beaten, who have been shot, who've been sometimes killed, and you claim that they're criminals. That's not the point. You don't get to treat people any kind of way just because they may have had a criminal history. You have a responsibility to be accountable to those individuals, and if you want to mistreat them just because they have a history, then what kind of system do we have? And that's the problem that I see. And Jeff is a big proponent of this. He's actually fundamentally wrong about this, and people settle these cases because it's not in the interest, and they could lose them and a lot more money. People are not just greedy to be greedy. They're trying to represent people who have been mistreated by the police, and they should be mistreated, and they should be represented. And that's my responsibility, and that's what I'm doing, and I don't apologize for it.
Mathai? I just to add on to what John is saying, what John didn't add, and I think he would say, and his partner Jim Chanin says, the reason that there are so many payouts is partly to do with their inability to comply with the reform effort we've been all talking about. I think John and Jim Chanin would say, if this was a department that was able to come into compliance with the NSA, you would not see as many payouts as you currently do.
Well, let me read a comment from a listener, and it dovetails with what we're talking about. I had mentioned earlier that Occupy Oakland certainly had a significant cost to the city of Oakland, and she writes, my experience was that it was the police themselves who were the problem in most instances. In terms of crowd control, the city could save a lot of money by drastically reducing police presence. The excessive use of force by the police is often much more of a problem than whatever behavior they are trying to control. I've seen the same thing in instances of the police response to street crime. As John Burris states, until the police can show some basic respect to the people of the city of Oakland, they will only exacerbate the violence that we experience on a daily basis. Let's stop acting like the police are the solution to the conditions of poverty and start redirecting scarce city resources to funding human services that can prevent crime. I'm getting a lot of emails like this one, though. The listener writes, I appreciate the candor of the new chief, but nobody seems to be focused on the core issue. The question is simple. What is wrong with the Oakland Police Department? Why haven't the problems that have continued for years and years been adequately addressed? And people are, you know, comparing, look at New York City, for example. And it is kind of a fascinating contrast, which I wish we had time to go into in more detail. But I hear my music coming up, and that means we're at the end of this hour. Let me extend thanks to all who participated in this hour, the guests that we've had, and I appreciate, of course, listener calls and emails. And want to remind you the forum is produced by Judy Campbell and Irene Iguchi. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. Our engagement producer, Amanda Stupai, with online support from David Marks. Senior editor is Dan Zoll, and executive producer is Raul Ramirez. And again, thanks to you, our listeners, and thanks to John Burris and Jeff Collins and Mathai Kuravilla and the chief who joined us, the acting chief who joined us earlier, and the city councilwoman. We're all about to have another hour of forum up ahead. Stay with us. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schrem and Maria Minetti Schrem, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.